Global business news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Radio Plus mobile app, and on your radio. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
From Bloomberg World Headquarters, I'm Charlie Pellett. The Dow Jones Industrial Average on track to make it 10 in a row. 13 minutes to go ahead of the close. Find out what happens at the closing bell. We have got the Dow up 32 points right now. It is at a record 20,807, a gain there of 0.2%. The S&P 500 index up by about half a point, 2362, little change there. NASDAQ is down 29 points to 5831, a drop of 0.5%. The 10-year up 9/32 at yield 2.38%. Gold up $16.90 the ounce to $12.50. That's a gain of 1.4%. Crude oil, West Texas Intermediate, up 76 cents a barrel, $54.35 on WTI. That is a gain of 1.4%. So again, the Dow on track for a record. S&P just turning lower down half a point. I'm Charlie Pellett. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash.
Thank you so much, Charlie. It is time for the Bloomberg ETF Report. It is brought to you by BlackRock. Worried about market volatility? Minimum volatility strategies may be able to help. To learn more, please visit BlackRock.com/factors, prepared by BlackRock Investments, LLC. Let's bring in Bloomberg's Catherine Cattery with more.
Hedge funds and ETFs have a complicated relationship. Bloomberg Intelligence analyst Eric Balchunas calls them frenemies. On the one hand, he says hedge funds use ETFs, and on the other, they compete in some areas. Balchunas on how hedge funds use ETFs.
They like to use ETFs to short out part of the market and make a bet on an individual name. So they have $100 billion in hedged exposure. In addition, they have some long exposure, although not a lot. We're talking $30 billion total in long exposure held with ETFs. To put that into perspective, that's only 1% of their total assets.
Balchunas takes a look at another way that hedge funds use ETFs.
They may have a portfolio, like an all-weather portfolio, that has all the asset classes, and they just shift between them. And ETFs make it easy. You can quickly ratchet up or ratchet down your emerging markets or your treasuries. And so you could have a couple ETFs used for that purpose.
In addition, hedge funds are using ETFs in place of futures contracts or swaps. That's your Bloomberg ETF report. I'm Catherine Cowdery.
You're listening to Bloomberg Markets with Carol Messer and Corey Johnson on Bloomberg Radio.
Now let me hold you close. You need a little bit of love.
Dr. Love, he's here. Howard Love joins us right now. He's the author of a book called The Startup J-Curve, Six Steps to Entrepreneurial Success. A guy who's got, started 15 companies, invested about 50 to 60 other startup companies with a look at what it takes to make a business work. You know, Howard, I just had John Chambers in here a little while ago, and we were talking about President Trump and his focus on industrial jobs. In manufacturing.
Yeah.
And John Chambers conceded, sorry, the chairman of Cisco, conceded that it's important to keep the jobs we have, but the growth in this economy is going to have from startups. And he talked about how many big companies he meets with, GE and the like, are all trying to innovate a startup-like culture. Doing all these startups, investing in all these startups, what is a startup culture?
Boy, great question. First of all, great to be back. Thank you. Thanks, Corey, for having me. I would say, startup culture is...
Thank Carol. I didn't want to have
And
her.
Carol!
No, I'm just kidding.
Carol.
Hello.
Sorry. A startup culture is really where a group of people have come together to create a product that is going to make a substantial difference in the world and either solve a problem that they see or create new opportunities, for people, whether it's entertainment or otherwise. And the culture is one that is very scrappy, that allows for quick failures, that allows for quick changes in direction, which is necessary for a successful startup, and one that allows people the creativity and individual initiative and resourcefulness. And I think that has been the struggle with large companies innovating, because large companies, as you know, and certainly from your Wall Street experience and reporting experience, when large companies, like the larger you get, the more predictable that you're supposed to be, and you got to hit the
right.
quarter.
Got to make the quarter.
Yeah, you got to make the quarter.
Hey,
can I
jump in for a second? Because I'm just thinking, I love that you're here today, because here we had another batch of CEOs back at the White House, and a lot of them are at companies that have been around for decades, a long time, long history. And, we're focusing on kind of manufacturing was the topic today, and how to bring manufacturing jobs, you know, back to the United States. And Howard, I wonder if, you know, I'm worried about, you know, what's going on in Washington, that we're approaching it differently. I mean, manufacturing has changed dramatically. You don't need as many workers. And is the innovation and innovative component being represented well in Washington as we try to fix some really serious problems?
Well, you know, I think it's a great question. There's no question that Trump himself and the administration have definitely seemed to focus on, you know, heavy manufacturing and industrial and large corporations and so forth. There's not quite enough talk about startups, although it is great to see people like Peter Thiel and other, you know, people from the Valley and from the startup culture weighing in and getting involved, Elon Musk and others. But the... You know, John Chambers is right that the jobs do come from startups. And, you know, here's the thing. The reality of it is that government, there's a limited amount of things that governments can do for startups. Usually, honestly, the best thing they can do is kind of get out of the way, and have policies that encourage investment in startups and have, you know, and just don't get in the way. You know, the previous administration did do some things that did make it kind of tough on startups in some ways, whether it's, you know, the part-time labor laws or, you know, anytime they get involved, there's issues. And I spent a fair amount of time with lawyers and otherwise just to make sure we were in compliance of all the substantial new regulations that came out over the last 8 years. You know, so if Trump is generally pro-growth for business, that, you know, that's a good thing. And,
you know, one of the things that you talk about sort of predictability and how companies go from a private startup where it's fake it till you make it, try to tell everyone the product's good and fix the problems that are there before anyone finds out that they're there and all that.
Yeah.
To being a public company.
Well, remember Microsoft 1.0 releases?
Well, and we've seen big companies with that too, I agree. But I do, you know, having just reported Tesla earnings, a company that quite often is faking it until they make it, a company where the CEO will say in Q4 of 2016, we're going to be cash flow positive for starting Q2 for the next year, and in fact doesn't just once. And it's not free cash flow positive ever. Maybe there will be someday. But this fake it till you make it isn't cool when you're a public company, but is maybe necessary when you're a private company?
Well, yeah. I mean, if you're a private startup, you know, scrappy is an integral word. Resourceful is an integral word. MVP. You know, what is MVP? I mean, MVP, you're not really releasing by definition a fully baked product. You're getting product out in the marketplace primarily to get market feedback, to get reaction from the market, to get the data you need to figure out what actually the final product is going to be. So, I think, you know, the startup culture is fast and loose, and I think, and that's fine. It should be. That, you know, innovation is a messy process. I think that, again, you know, if you look at the words we've been using to describe startups, I think that's the challenge in larger companies is that they struggle with the messiness of innovation.
It's interesting too. I mean, because that kind of folding that culture in a big company culture is an enormous struggle because they're inherently at odds in some certain ways. It's against predictability. It's against stability.
Well, absolutely. And for that matter, one of the things that I say in the book, and I have a whole chapter on how to apply startup type things to larger companies. But one of the biggest challenges is that, you know, that I mentioned in the book is that the original business plan almost never works.
Yep.
So you can imagine, you know, you go to your board, you go to your boss, and, you know, you say, this is a great plan, but then suddenly you have to switch it every, you know.
Never mind. The book is called The Startup J-Curve. The author's Howard Love. Glad to see him. This is Bloomberg Markets.